Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gygax, and we are having yet another episode about the tentative agreement because it's on everybody's mind, and now finally it's in everybody's hand. So without any further ado, you guys already know who my guest is today. Welcome, Tyler Vassar.
Alan, good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So one of these days you'll come on here and we're going to talk about how great things are and how everything is going according to plan. But that is not what's happening right now. We finally have our hands on the tentative agreement, and I don't want to keep people in too much suspense. How you planning on voting?
Well, I don't think that's any secret. I'm voting no. I
Yeah.
reject.
Object, yeah. Or is it approve and disapprove? I don't even remember
It's
what
I
the
accept or I reject is
reject.
what it
That's
is.
it.
Yep.
Reject.
And I
Yep.
just got my ballot came today, but we have one mailbox key and my girlfriend has that on her key ring. So she's about to get home. And after this
Okay.
interview, I'm about to.
Nice. So you got it because of informed delivery?
That's right. Yeah. And a
That.
number of people at my station live in the zone and everyone got
Yep.
it today. So.
Yeah, we got ours. A lot of us got ours on Saturday. I got mine on Saturday. Some got them on Monday. Also, see them on an informed delivery. So you're not one of those people who just lets your mail build up in your mailbox, are you?
Absolutely not. I'm a good male customer as well as a
Nice. All right. Good
worker.
job. Good job. I'm proud of you, buddy.
Thanks.
All right. So, look, I know, like me, maybe even more than me, your heart is with CCAs. And they get such a raw deal on this contract. And I want you to talk about for the younger carriers, there may be some younger carriers out there who see that we lose steps A, and B and think, oh man, this is going to be a huge boon for me. What do CCAs and new hires need to think about with this new contract?
Just for a little bit of background before I answer that question
Sure.
exactly, like I think the creation of the CCA position, the two-tier pay scale, all of the things that came with that, the DOS award just over a decade ago were huge defeats for the letter carrier craft overall, not just CCAs, for letter carriers in general, even those much higher up on the pay scale, because those two things in particular were part of a broad much broader assault on wages and working conditions of letter carriers across the board, an assault on the union. Any contract, any TA that doesn't address the question of not the non-career underpaid and super exploited section of the workforce, the CCA, is a non-starter for me.
Yeah.
And
Go ahead.
while this TA got rid of a few steps at the beginning of the pay scale, which is good, it's a good thing. I can't remember, what is it, two or three? It's been so long. I
I think it's
haven't
three.
looked
I
at
think
that
it's
in.
A, and B.
It's
Something
too
like
little
that.
too it's too
Yeah.
little too late, in my
Right.
opinion. This TA does not change the fundamental issues with the CCA position. Is this contract is a que Here's a question. Is this contract enough to fix the staffing issues at stations across the country? In my
Absolutely
opinion,
not.
no. No, it
Yep.
doesn't. This it doesn't address mandatory overtime, the position of precarity that CCAs face on a daily basis. And for those reasons, no, I don't think this is I it's too little too late, in my opinion.
So, Tyler, this is one of the things that I love about having you on Classes of Male is that you have this broader context of the labor movement in general. And the idea that people should be able to support themselves on 8 hours pay, not only is that not addressed in this contract, we move backward in this contract for that. I mean, that's what that whole 12-hour, being able to volunteer to go past 12 hours is about. It's essentially an acknowledgement that people cannot live on what is being offered in this contract.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, whatever happened to the 8-hour day?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And, as Charlie Miller and others in the CLC have pointed out, our union, the National Association of Letter Carriers, was created by veterans of the American Civil War and was founded on the principle of the 8-hour day. It wasn't just something they added in their beginning charters. That was the main thing they got organized around. 8 hours of work, 8 hours of rest, 8 hours of recreation. Everyone's heard that, right? The
Right.
letter carrier job should be one where we can provide a quality standard of living for ourselves and our families on 8 hours of work. We should work in order to live. We should not have to live in order to just work. That's
Right.
a
After
pretty
talking
simple
to you,
concept.
you'd like to think. So after talking to you and talking to John Murphy, I feel like I have a better handle on the labor movement. I listened to some labor movement audiobooks. I read up on things like the Haymarket riot, where people were killed fighting for an 8-hour day. Now, there were other issues going on at Haymarket. There was some
course.
violence, but ultimately, it's part of this movement. And this is in the late 1800s. And exactly to your point, that's what the NALC grew out of, is part of that movement. And we've completely forgotten that that's what a work-life balance is supposed to be.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, just to add to that, I don't think it's a win to be able to work past 12 hours and opens up the door for a lot of bad potential scenarios. Like working past the 12-hour limit could create a situation at a station where a few workers there regularly work 12, 14, 16 hours. And I know people that would want to do that, at stations across Minneapolis. In the long run, that could mean the loss of several routes, several,
Oh, that's a good point.
several letter carrier jobs at that station. And then, what happens when, say, there's three carriers that regularly work 14 hours, 16 hours? What happens when those carriers are sick or on vacation
Right.
or
Who's
bid
gonna
out?
pick up that slack?
Well, guess what? Then that whole station gets forced. I mean, that's just one scenario
That's a great point.
on top of the sort of philosophical reasons to oppose that, in my opinion.
Right. So with the CCAs, their raise in this is a dollar, maybe. And well, they're at 19 something now. I think they're at 20 something or 21 by the end of the new contract. And there's no way you can bring in new people at those wages.
Yeah,
So
definitely.
I talked to Renfro himself at a rap session here in Vegas. It was about a year ago now. And I cornered him. It was something that I played the audio on my podcast and said, "Hey, what is the wage that we're looking at for new hires?" And he said, "It's the amount that's on table one," which at the time was about $30, $31 an hour. And here we are still at $20 an hour. From my perspective, this is a complete failure for anybody at the lower end of our pay table.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, BFN stands for and is fighting for a $30 an hour starting wage. I mean, I remember Mike Karif, I think it was on Corey's from 8 Arbitration a while back, talked about how, what was it, 2004, 2005, 2006, something like that. They were coming in, TEs were coming in, what was it,
Right, at
around
like
20
eight
bucks an
seventeen,
hour?
yeah, something like that. Yeah. Right,
And so
very
it's.
close. Yeah, right, exactly. The money's there in the sense that the post office has paid this. The post office is paying PTF clerks like $27 an hour or something like that.
Yeah,
So it
in some cases that's absolutely right. I think, like, to me, it's the wages are one thing, but it's also that combined with mandatory overtime, combined with, I mean, combined it creates the huge amount, huge rates of new hires quitting
Without
over and
question.
over again, and it creates these endless cycles of people quitting, understaffing because of mandatory overtime, which then creates more mandatory overtime, a loss of morale, and creates the conditions of division amongst carriers, and it weakens the union and our position in this whole process. And so it's just like it's more than just, man, I wish I was paid more. This is about the stability and of long term of the craft and of our union. It affects those even in the middle of the pay scale or even at the top of the pay
Oh,
scale.
without question. So during the election, my station was perpetually short-staffed, not just because we had this tremendously high workload, but then when people are working 12 hours, 14 hours in a day, they start calling in sick more. And so now we have more routes down, and it's just this self-perpetuating cycle. And again, to go back to the things that Renfro would say in the rap sessions, that yeah, both sides acknowledge that we're going to have to do something to attract new people into this job. What was that never happened? It's madness. How are we supposed to get people to come in? It's not going to happen.
And there's one thing, Alan, there's one thing about saying we're going in, we're fighting for $30 an hour, and we put up a fight, we get organized, we have a contract campaign, we get people mobilized, we build pressure, and we come out with 25 or 24 or 28 or something. Okay, a demand is not a promise. It's something where it's a goal we're fighting for collectively. But the thing is, we didn't put up a fight. Renfro and DeJoy or Renfro, whoever from USPS in a room is not a fight. It's not a contract campaign. And that's one of the many reasons why it's unacceptable and why the sort of major give backs or, the sellout contract is so unacceptable because we didn't even put up a fight.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard Ricardo Guzman when he was on Ada Arbitration recently, but he talked about asking Renfro, how come the CCAs didn't get Juneteenth as an additional holiday? And Renfro's response was, well, management said no. And Ricardo says, well, yeah, I get that management said no, that part's obvious, but like, what was their reason? And Renfro says, oh, they didn't give a reason. And there's your proof that we don't fight about it, we don't push for it. There's no fight.
All the more reason to get rid of the CCA position in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, that is exactly right. They are second-class citizens. And you and I were at the National Convention in Boston, and you heard people say, like, when the topic of locality pay would come up, and people would speak against it and say, look, we're all working the same job here. We shouldn't have separate pay structures. It's you need to just have a living wage, and everybody needs to get paid what they need to survive. And then here we are looking at this contract, and it absolutely does not happen. And
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
yep. Go ahead.
just really quick on locality pay. I know we
Oh,
don't want to
yep,
go down
go,
rabbit
please.
holes, but it's that line of reasoning really drove me crazy because it's one thing to say that if the one wage that we all had was enough for you to live comfortably both in Boston and in Arkansas, you know, but that's
Exactly.
not the reality, you know, and by that I mean a high cost of living place and a lower cost of living place, although everything's getting more expensive, even if you're in the middle of the country. I can tell you that for a matter of fact, up here in Minneapolis, things are getting more expensive. But so under those, so I could totally understand that line of reasoning if the starting pay and the wages overall were good, regardless of if you live in a high or low cost of living place. But
That's
that's not
it.
the case.
And so if you're going to do that, if you're going to have this one salary and okay, we're all in this boat together, then as a leader, you have a moral obligation to make sure that the people you're bringing in can live.
Yeah.
And we're failing in that moral obligation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, so let's get to some more of the questions here. All right, so Article 8, that's a big point of controversy in the new contract. There are some things in there that seem good, at least on the face. Like, I know we've already touched on it a little bit, but there is now a right of refusal for some employees that when they hit the contractual limit of 11 and a half or 12 hours, they can go home without fear of discipline. And what's your take on that provision?
I mean, yeah, I'm glad it's in there. I don't really see how it's different than, I mean, there was already a 12-hour limit. Obviously,
Right. We've already had it.
this just strengthens it, which is a good thing. I want to see a right to refusal at 8 hours, at least,
Exactly. I
or
agree
at least
100%.
at the very least, an end of mandatory overtime off of your route. I can understand the idea of like, okay, there's peak season at different times where you're going to go an hour or maybe two on your own route on a Monday or a day after a holiday, but at the very least. But I mean, a right to refusal at 8 is what I think we should be striving for.
Dude, the next time I pick it, I want my sign to read end mandatory overtime. This is not a repeat from 1887.
There you go. I like that.
Yeah, and exactly to your point from earlier, that's how, what our union is founded on. That's what our union is supposed to stand for. And it's something that we seem to have completely lost our way in terms of work-life balance. And the new Article 8 provisions seem to only make it worse because essentially what they're doing now is normalizing working beyond those limits. Because now it's not even a grievance. It's just, oh, if you want to do that, go ahead, and this is what you get paid. There's nothing wrong with it now.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. I mean, I
Yeah.
this is a very physical job, and you might not feel it now, or you might not feel it a couple of years from now, but you will feel this, further down. I remember just when I was a CCA, I remember I was at a station that was understaffed, and I was working on one of the routes that was notorious for people getting injured on it because it was just long and heavy and all
Wow.
this other stuff, and I had injured my leg. I can't even remember exactly. Injured my leg somehow. And I was just taking ibuprofen and working through it. And this carrier, had been around for a lot longer than me. And she looked at me and she said, "You have to go and get that looked at. And you have to stand up for yourself. You have to get restrictions if that's what you need, even if it's temporarily, because you might be able to work through it now with some ibuprofen. But this is how, people develop limps long term. This is
Right.
how people, you know, this is. This is the reality, not to be over dramatic or something. This is the reality. The reason why we need to take safety so seriously is because you might work through something now and say, "Oh, I can deal with it." 10,
Even
15,
more
20
so
years down
because
the
the job
road.
has changed, where people who are at 30 years now, when they came in, it was 4 hours casing, 4 hours delivering, or very close to that. And they didn't have all the parcels that we have now. You know, the bundles, it just wasn't as physically taxing as now you're spending 7 hours on the street, maybe 10 hours on the street, and it's far more demanding on your body. Yeah, you need that balance for sure. So, you know, for me, I'm about to hit my 19th anniversary at the post office. And
Congrats.
I thank you. And I still feel pretty good. Like my feet are okay, my knees are okay, my hips are okay, or at least and my back, like nothing really that's killing me. But the other day, I get out of bed and my wife, like in the morning, my wife says, "What's wrong? Why are you limping so bad?" And I didn't even notice I was doing it because that's just normal. Every time I get up, this is what my body does. And yeah, maybe I am actually getting beat up by this job.
It can happen, you know, it can happen.
Yeah, that's the truth. So yeah, so this further eroding of work-life balance ultimately doesn't do people any good. The only real benefit, and I'm reluctant to even call it that, is that if you're struggling financially, you can just work yourself to death to make more money. But that's where the union is supposed to be looking out for its members, you know, and we're obviously failing at that.
Yeah,
All right,
absolutely.
so that's the hours limits. Now, what about let's see. People are afraid to go to arbitration. I see that from time to time on Facebook that oh, if we go to arbitration, we could lose anything. So what is your position or the BFN's position on this fear of arbitration?
Yeah, I mean, how it's being used is it's you being used, I think, in bad faith to fearmonger and to just try to force through. You should just accept vote I accept and accept the scraps that you've been given. And so I reject that sort of line of reasoning. That being said, I also don't want to sow any illusions in arbitration as like the be all end all best thing we can ever hope for. Ultimately, arbitration is a tool that was sort of dangled in front of the union in the aftermath of the 1970 postal strike, Wildcat strike, in order to convince us we don't need the right to strike. Look, we have these avenues to be able to not have to do that in the future. That being said, I think we have a good case in arbitration this time around. On the sort of moral side of the question, we worked through COVID without hazard pay. I mean, I remember I delivered on very busy streets. I could have put a blindfold on and just walked in circles in the middle of the road, and there's not a car around. We
True.
worked through COVID without hazard pay while the rest of the world shut down on the economic side. And there's a lot more moral questions, but that's just one of them for the brevity. On the economic side, the Postal Service is a crucial public service. We do last mile deliveries for Amazon, FedEx, UPS. We have a universal service obligation, which I think is a good thing.
So with COVID, just
Also,
to dovetail on that real
oh,
quickly,
sure.
is when the COVID tests came out, they got delivered to everyone in the country. And aside from the Postal Service, there is no possible way that that could happen. You know, maybe some future outbreak, there's a vaccine that needs to be delivered to everybody in the country. The Postal Service is the only way to make that happen. We are a critical part of the national infrastructure. And whether
I
we make
agree.
money or not, you know, we're kind of like Amtrak in that way. No, Amtrak does not make money, but they keep the rail system maintained and running so that when we need rail, we have it. Postal Service is the exact same way.
Right. Does the fire department make money? I don't, like
Exactly. Yeah.
name a thing that I think public transportation that I think is good for the
Right.
public. I mean, also the fact that a public postal service exists that is relatively affordable and reliable means that the private delivery companies cannot raise their prices to out of control levels. I think that's something that is kind of missed sometimes. It's also a control. It's also sort of a stop on if we didn't exist, you better believe UPS and FedEx and the other ones would be it would cost a lot more to get things delivered. And in this modern world, where deliveries are becoming more and more important and critical to the overall US economy, this is a crucial service for people in the US. I would love for someone who's a lot smarter than me and better with numbers to crunch how much money, how much value a letter carrier produces for the economy on average on a daily basis, or even on a yearly basis or something. How much money we make for Amazon. Without the Postal Service, Amazon would not have been able to rise to the position that it's currently in.
Oh,
It's sort of been
without
used as
question.
like a public welfare for Amazon, you know?
Right. And that's like other parts of infrastructure. Without roads, Amazon couldn't do what they do. Without air
That's right.
traffic controllers, Amazon couldn't do what they do. And those are all part of national infrastructure that the government spends money on and spends it wisely.
Exactly. And so on those points, and I think there's many more, but on those points, I think we have a really strong case in arbitration. But more important for me and what BFN is, tries to try to inject into these conversations is not just, well, we got a good case in arbitration. That's one part of it. What we try to argue for is that how we get organized once it's sent to arbitration. First of all, we need the strongest no vote possible. Sending it to arbitration on the back of an 80% no vote would be huge. It
Yeah,
would
that
play a
sends a
role.
message.
Right, it would send a message, and this is also an arbitration is when public pressure would be the most important, when public support would really help us the most. In many of the vote no recommendation resolutions that passed across the country, like the one in Branch 9 in Minneapolis and 1100 in LA, they had in them not only a recommendation of a no vote to the membership, but also in the case of a no vote for contract rallies to be organized within that 15-day window of renegotiation. And I think the national leadership of NELC should put resources and energy and time into organizing the biggest and strongest possible public contract rallies across the country within that time frame to show USPS and arbitrators why we voted no and what we demand. What do we need? Will that happen? I don't think so, but it's good to sometimes
Not
talk
with this
about
leadership.
exactly. It's good to talk about what is objectively necessary, even if it's not going to happen. And I think that's the bigger thing to me. I think also people are pretty tired. People want to move on. I'm not sure there's going to be hundreds of contract rallies in January across the country when we vote this thing down. If we vote this thing down, when we vote this thing down. But I still think that's the kind of organizing that is needed. And this is the type of organizing that we should have started off with a bang on when negotiations first started going on 2 years ago.
At that time, we all kind of still had faith in the process. And obviously that faith is misplaced. I know you don't really want to take a victory lap over a shit contract, but goddamn, Tyler, you were right when you said we want to know what's going on because we don't trust. You were right not to trust.
But you're right on the point of like the open bargaining. It really, I was expecting because of the objective situation with inflation and other unions winning, fighting and winning, that man, even without much of a fight, a halfway decent contract was going to be secured. Boy, was I wrong. I was proven, BFN and all the others across the country who fought for open bargaining, we were all proven right that we not only did we want, should we have known what was going on, we needed some transparency, but dang, let's put up a fight or something,
Yeah, that's exactly right. And yeah, in a way, it's vindicating, but it's a very bitter victory because yeah, we would much rather just have functional leadership. So, okay, for someone like me, I'm at the top of the pay scale and I'm not affected very much by what goes on. It'd be nice to get a big raise, but I'm doing okay. I have a mortgage that's affordable. I'm already at the top of the pay scale, so I'm fine. I know that you and a lot of BFN people are still working your way up through the pay scale. And people in your position, people who are CCAs now, some of them have got to be really hurting financially, and they're desperate to get that back pay. Why should they forego this palliative back paycheck in the hopes that we'll get something better in arbitration? What hope do you give to them?
It's understandable. I sympathize with you. I also need the back pay. But again, we can't accept table scraps. If we accept this TA, then management will try this tactic every time. They'll try to starve us out for over 500 days and then force through a crappy contract because we're desperate for back pay,
And
which we
we've shown we'll
need.
accept it.
They'll try to do that every time. And I think that's, I really have tried to hit that point with people because we can't accept to just, accept the table scraps. But, I also get that people are sick of thinking about it. They want to move on. Man, we've been talking about this contract for, again, negotiations started in what was it, January or February of 2023. So it's going on 2 years. And they want to, and some even want to say, well, I know it's bad, but I want to focus on fighting for the next time. But for all the reasons that I've listed above and that we've talked about, We can't accept this contract. We have to vote no, and we have to fight for more. And in reality, it's not just a question of maybe accept it this time and then we'll fight for more next time. Being able to be on solid footing to fight for more next time, in my opinion, means fighting now, voting no now, and using that momentum to launch ourselves into 2026 and beyond, you know.
Yep. Obviously, I agree with you. If you're in comfortable financial situation right now, that's great. So I would ask of that person who's comfortable now to forego their back pay, to put that off for a while in order to set the table for the future of our service, the future of the
Exactly.
members of the NALC. And then
Exactly.
if you're struggling now, then you know what that struggle is like. And we're fighting to end that struggle, to make things better, to make it so where the people who come in behind you don't have to struggle. And so we have to decide whether we're in this together or not. Because if we're in this together, we have to think about all of our futures, including the people who are being hired right now, or worse, the people who aren't being hired right now because we're not paying a reasonable wage to bring them in. And if any of this has a chance to be fixed, we have to stand up and say, no, we are not, exactly as you put it, we are not going to accept table scraps.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Ah, damn, Tyler, it is always inspiring having you on the show, man. You are a
good to be
fantastic
here.
guest.
If I could just say
Yeah,
one
please.
last thing before we wrap up here, I want to just make an appeal for people that the fight for open bargaining, the fight for a no vote, all of this is just the first steps. There's a lot of people. There's a broad reform effort, a broad reform movement building and growing in NALC. And I just want to appeal to people that build a fighting NALC, which came out of the fight for open bargaining, which has joined forces alongside CLC and Mike Carriff and many others to vote no and fight for more in this contract. We're getting organized to turn BFN from a loose national movement into a real organized force, a rank and file reform caucus within NALC for the years to come. And we need better leadership. We need new leadership at the top and in the branches across the country. That's absolutely right. But in my opinion, that's not enough. We want to get the rank and file active and organized in the union and fight for a real program. BFN stands for, in this contract, $30 an hour starting wage, an end to mandatory overtime, an all career workforce, cutting the time from top pay from 13 to 6 years, and much, much more, including fighting for the right to strike. And so if you want to get organized and fight for a stronger NELC, to build a fighting NELC, then I think you should join BFN. Go to fightingnelc.com and sign up to join. We're getting started. We're starting to organize chapters, starting small, but we want to build a strong foundation and build up from there. From Los Angeles to South Florida, Minneapolis to Des Moines, Allentown, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Boston, and many more places. We have groups of people who are getting organized, starting BFN chapters, and want to transform this union from the bottom up. And so I just appeal, if you want to, that's interesting to you, want to fight for the right to strike, you want to fight to transform the union, join BFN. We're just getting started, but I think the future is bright for reforming the union, and I think but it's going to take organization. So I
You
just
said that
want to.
website is fightingnalc.com.
That's right. Yep.
Fantastic. Yeah, everybody go to that website, join up, follow BFN, follow Tyler on Facebook, on Instagram, wherever you get that information. And Tyler, I absolutely can't wait to have you on again. Hopefully, we have some celebrating to do the next
That's
time.
right.
You have been a fantastic guest, as always. Thank you, Tyler, for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Alan. And talk to you soon.
All right. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time.